I think there were maybe times in history when people would really listen closely to what the church says on this or that issue. And maybe partly out of our own missteps, society no longer wants to listen to us.
Is that really true? And if it's true, how do we turn things around? How do we effectively become the salt and light the Scripture calls us to be in this world?
I think our contribution to the culture as Christians, as genuine Orthodox Christians, has to be true, honest, and real, speaking to people where they are. You know, then they're going to listen.
This is Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network, and we're going to hear from a guest who has some strong thoughts on that subject of being a Christian and making an impact, being the kind of positive witness that causes people to listen and pay attention. Stay tuned. And as always, I am so glad you've chosen to spend a few of your precious minutes with us as we share our thoughts and the thoughts of others through this broadcast over the next 26 minutes or so. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. If you're new and are hearing us over one of the radio stations in our broadcast network, one of our radio partners, then I want to make sure you also know that we have a website at myocn.net. That's where you can go to hear this broadcast again and many of our other recent programs. Plus, you can keep up to date on Orthodox Christian news from around the world and learn more about the Orthodox Christian Church and what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. That's myocn.net. Before we launch into that conversation, I promised we're going to take a couple of minutes and introduce you to the Bible in a way you've probably never thought of. There are a lot of creative ideas out there to help you and me read through the Bible. In the studio, I have at least a couple of them right here in front of me, one that takes a reader through the Bible in a year and another that gets us through the entire Bible in 90 days. Well, our first guest has a creative plan that's not going to replace the options I just mentioned, but it's sure going to get us pointed in the right direction.
Jenna Reese is back on the show with us today to talk about her new book, The Twibble, All the Chapters of the Bible in 140 Characters or Less. Jenna is also the author of Flunking Sainthood, which was named by Publishers Weekly as one of the best religious books of 2011. Welcome back, Jenna.
Thank you so much.
So where did you get the idea to come up with this? I mean, who's your audience?
Well, the audience has started out on Twitter. So the Twibble was a project that began in 2009, where I decided I was going to tweet out a chapter of the Bible every day with humorous commentary in 140 characters or less. Hmm. And part of the reason for this was that I'd tried to read the Bible all the way through, you know, start to finish several times and never made it, and realized that there were whole sections of the Bible that I really didn't know very much about, and so I wanted to read all of it together, and I wanted to do it in community and to make it fun.
Okay. This book claims to be the Bible, now with 68% more humor and 99% fewer begets.
Yeah.
Religious humor is tricky, as we know, because not everyone agrees on where the line can be drawn between humor and someone might even say heresy. So where's that line for you?
Well, I think it depends on the topic. In the Twibble, for example, I'm never poking fun at Jesus. I don't think that that's appropriate. However, I do poke fun at his disciples. I think that there are some points in the Gospels where they are almost willfully misunderstanding what Jesus is about, and he gets really frustrated mm-hmm. with them at some points. And so one of the cartoons for the book, there are 51 illustrations that accompany this, and one of them has the disciples, and they're standing around, and one of them is wearing an I'm with stupid T-shirt, and Jesus has just kind of got his head in his hands like, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
What am I doing here, right? Did you learn anything that actually had an impact on your personal relationship with God?
Ooh, what a good question. I was very moved when I was tweeting the book of Job, for example. It just so happened that I hit the book of Job when a family member was in the hospital, and so many of the questions that are raised in Job about, you know, what they call theodicy, the issue of why do good things happen, bad things happen to good people, why is there suffering in the world, and where is God when we are hurting? Those were the same questions that I was asking myself, and I think at some point all of us ask. And it means so much to me that those questions are in the canon.
And finally, let me ask you, what's your favorite verse or passage in the Bible? Because I'm sure it probably was a battle to find one, but let me ask you for the one that you felt was special.
My favorite Bible verse or my favorite Twible interpretation of it?
Well, give us both.
Okay. My favorite Bible verse is from Micah. It's Micah chapter 6, verse 8, which is, "What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God?" And I don't think that the tweet from that chapter captured the beauty of that chapter, but I think for my favorite tweet, I would choose one from the book of Revelation, which, you know, had its own challenges because it's very difficult to encapsulate these dreams and visions in 140 characters. So in chapter 12, there's this woman clothed with the sun who gives birth. And so the tweet for that is, "A sparkly woman gives birth to baby Jesus with a killer dragon as midwife. This could really spice up the nativity creche at Christmas."
Okay. All right. Well, look, it sounds like an incredible book, the Twible, all the chapters of the Bible in 140 characters or less. Thanks a lot, Jenna.
Oh, thank you so much.
To read Jenna's daily Twible tweets on Twitter, try saying that three times fast, just search for her, Jenna Reese, on Twitter. And her book, The Twible, is available through our web store at myocn.net. Just click on the Buy button on our homepage to access the web store. And by the way, when you access Amazon through the OCN web store, any purchase you make will generate a contribution back to this ministry. Please keep that in mind. Well, this month we'll be talking with a number of guests who have impacted Christian culture on a global level. And to launch this series, Father Chris has placed a phone call to Peter Boutenef about Christianity and culture. And Dr. Boutenef is the Associate Professor of Systematic Theology at St. Vladimir's Orthodox Theological Seminary.
Peter, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Father Chris. It's a pleasure.
There's about a $1 billion industry, I'm told, out there of products producing specifically things for Christians. Products of every kind, geared towards every age group. Why do you think Orthodoxy as a whole isn't a bigger part of that?
I think that Orthodoxy kind of marches to the beat of its own drum a little bit. And sometimes that's actually a good thing. You know, do we need an Orthodox televangelist raising money for his theme park, you know, whatever. These are exaggerations, but they're part of that $1 billion industry. I think to an extent we're going to want to do things a little differently. We naturally tend to do things differently. There are other examples where Orthodoxy has done things very much in step with the whole Christian West and the industry that you're talking about, and the results can be positive. They can be controversial. They can be positive. Like, you know, some of our preachers in the church can sometimes suddenly sound more like a Baptist preacher, you know, dramatic, using rhetorical devices and perky phrases. And guess what? I think that can actually be fabulously energizing. That can be very positive if the content is good and true. You know, why not make it more infectious? But I think a lot of us in the church find it hard to make that work right, you know. On the other hand, I think a lot of people, especially who convert into the Orthodox Church from other traditions, okay, they came from traditions that are very much a part of that industry that produces all these products, these cultural products, et cetera. And I think they very quickly want to shed that and say, okay, now I'm Orthodox. Now I'm really different. Now I can't do things the same way, you know. I only raise this to say that we're trying out all kinds of different things, sometimes more in step with the industry you're talking about and sometimes out of step with it. And I say God bless every effort to try to get it right, you know. I think Orthodoxy has come tremendous strides thanks to people like you and thanks to so many people who, you know, are making strides to make it more and more widely received, more heard in America. And we can't hide behind this sensibility like, oh, we don't do it like the West.
Well,
we
let's
just
talk
pray
about
the liturgy, and that should be enough.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about that. Because Come See the Light, which you referenced in the beginning, has been on the air now for 18 years. OCN, the Orthodox Christian Network, which is an agency of then SCOBA, now the Assembly of Canonical Bishops in America, since 2003. It is recognized as the media voice of Orthodox Christianity in America. It includes radio, internet, podcasts, video casting, blogging, webinars, you name it, it's out there.
Yep.
And we are members of the National Religious Broadcasting Association, the National Association of Broadcasters, on and on and on and on. But here's the difference. Our effort is to not go in and tell people what's wrong with them. Our effort is to witness Christ in the sense that, okay, folks, this is what we are. Because you can correct me. You're a professor. I'm just a simple priest here, okay? I mean, everything I know about Orthodoxy says it goes into a culture and then it baptizes that culture and brings it underneath. So we're not all going to be the same. There's never going to be one. I hear some people, they make me laugh sometimes because they say, well, I want to do something that's truly Orthodox.
Yeah.
And I say, well, how do you know you're truly Orthodox? Who are you to say that you are truly Orthodox? So the issue here is sharing the historical Church of Christ with the world, as you say, which is starving for it. We have now hundreds, literally millions of hours of listening around the world of people over this almost 20 years now.
Oh, so thank God for OCN.
Thank God for that.
And just the way you put it, you know, not telling people what's wrong with them, but leading them to what is right and baptizing the culture. Father John Meyendorf used to say, we don't baptize a culture, we baptize people one at a time.
There you go.
But that results in a cultural shift.
Yep.
And that's what we're all after.
Well, in the last 100 years especially, there have been a number of individuals who have made really a huge and I would say a lasting impact, not only on Christian culture, but on popular culture. For example, I mean, C.S. Lewis, whose Christian-themed Narnia books were so magical that Hollywood produced a whole series on them. Why is it, do you think, or is it important that we as Christians not create a separate culture, but take an active role in shaping popular culture, which is at large?
Well, yeah, I agree with how you put the question. I think some folks think that you should create a separate Christian culture and even a separate Orthodox culture. And, okay, we could say, on the one hand, we can produce a culture for ourselves. We can produce a series of lectures or books about the Council of Nicaea or something. That's going to be kind of internally aimed, right? But then you have another interesting phenomenon. You have people who are Orthodox, and they're making, I'm thinking of movies, that very clearly come out of the Orthodox culture. I'm thinking of Andrei Tarkovsky's Andrei Rublev. Then I'm thinking of a much more recent movie, Ostrov, The Island. Have you?
No, I've not seen that.
It's absolutely stunningly beautiful. I recommend it to all of our listeners, Ostrov. It was made about 4 or 5 years ago. And these films, naturally, they resonate in a special way with Orthodox, because we recognize, you know, we recognize the monastic setting or the icons, whatever. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, these same movies have a powerful resonance in the wider world. You know, they win film awards, they're shown at festivals. And that's a beautiful and rare combination where you have kind of Orthodox speaking as Orthodox, you know, showing everything that's Orthodox, but in a way that's receivable outside, you know?
Yes.
I think by and large, though, those are rare cases, and I don't think we should be creating a separate kind of a churchy culture, because I think that would be giving up on the world and giving up on mission, on being missionaries, which we all have to be. What we have to do is find ways of expressing ourselves in the totality of who we are. And yes, we are Christians, right? And the whole theology can play a more or less obvious role in how we do that. You know, people are going to tune out if they sense that, you know, you're kind of preaching a churchy message to them. They're, you know, a very small contingent of the wider world is going to actually bother to pay attention.
Well,
don't you think?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's the case. And the problem I think we have many times is we want to go back to the fathers rather than walk forward with them.
Yes.
So we have this tendency that we say, okay, well, the world has really gone wacko. So let's just surround our wagons, create our own little Orthodox Christian communities, and then we don't have to worry about dealing with anybody else.
Right.
And that's not going to work. That's not reality, is it?
It's not reality. It's in a way, it's an easier path.
Sure.
Walking forward with the fathers, as you put it, is more challenging because mm-hmm. it means, I've got to change my life, and I've got to help people change too, you know? And change is hard, you know,
especially
when you're talking about, you know, a world that, yes, this is a fallen world. This is a flawed world. But as part of the church, we're also part of the cure. And, but getting people to listen to us, it's not going to happen if we just, you know, act all churchy all the time.
No. You know, I hear a lot lately in the news, and I've said it a couple times in different programs. People are probably going to get tired of hearing me say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. And that is this issue of you have to be on the right side of history. And, you know, okay, the right side of history, we can go back and numbers of empires and rulers and all kinds of things that have happened culturally, morally, in the course that at that moment people thought were correct, and then they found out, whoops, you know. So I tell people I'd really much rather be on the side of truth, which is the side of the Gospels. So
right.
I want to go a little bit into that with you. What do you think is going to happen to Christian culture and even to Christianity's voice in the popular culture over the next, let's say, 25 years, as the church continues to splinter over issues, homosexuality, reproductive issues, gun control? I mean, everything now is a split issue.
I think a couple things. For one, it feels to me that Christianity has to re-earn the right to speak in the public square. You know, I think there were maybe times in history when people would really listen closely to what the church says on this or that issue, and maybe partly out of our own, you know, missteps, society no longer wants to listen to us. And because the church has tended to bludgeon people too much with the kinds of issues you just mentioned, you know, we're so quick to say no abortion, no gay marriage, no stem cells. Okay, I mean, these are all, you know, appropriate in some ways to say this kind of thing, but we don't give thought to how we say them. We say them as if we're talking to ourselves. It's as if we're talking to people who are already committed to the vision of Christ, you know. And I think people outside of that vision have stopped listening to the church.
Yes.
And it's taken somebody like Pope Francis to get people's attention again, you know. He's like on the cover of every magazine.
Yes.
Why? Because he begins with the message of love.
Yeah. Very simple, isn't it?
And Christ-like service to the downtrodden. You know, once you get people's attention, then you can begin getting them to listen about the other life issues, you know. And he's started talking about that too, you know. When it comes to culture and these issues of how abortion, et cetera, would be a part of our Orthodox cultural contribution, I think the same thing applies. I think if we were to try to make a movie about the scandal of gay marriage and show all kinds of, you know, pathetic gay stereotypes or whatever, where would that get anybody?
Mm.
You know, I think our contribution to the culture as Christians, as genuine Orthodox Christians, has to be true, honest, and real, speaking to people where they are. You know, then they're going to listen. But, you know, your question also had to do with the point that we are splintered on some of these issues. And, yeah, to an extent we are. And maybe that's another reason not to be using those issues as the anchor of our contribution to culture.
Right, right.
You know, our country, our culture, what we say in culture has to be about how to live, what vision to follow, how do you love in a deeply flawed world.
Yeah, and our purpose. What is our purpose? Why are we here?
I don't
hear anybody talking about that. They're talking about, I mean, we talk about our sexuality as if people were intimate 24 hours a day. That's all right. You hear. That's all our kids are hearing. They constantly hear that. And, you know, we talk with our youth groups. We say, look, guys, your intimacy given to you by God, your intimacy between a man and a wife, husband and wife, is something very beautiful and blessed by God. But you can't do it 24 hours a day.
That's right.
Okay? There are other parts to life. It is part of life. But here, all these issues have become so overpowering. And you, I think you hit it right on the head. You said, look at Pope Francis. Look what he's done. Very simple. I don't need red shoes. I need to go out there and I need to minister. I need to show love. If the church does that in a personal relationship with people, I think I agree with you. I think it'll turn around.
Yeah. May God grant it.
I mean,
and Pope Francis doesn't retreat from the hard and fast, you know, strict Christian teaching on those issues you mentioned.
Absolutely.
But that's just not where he starts and ends.
Right. I mean, you can still preach the truth, but preach it in love, can't you?
Indeed.
Right. Okay.
Indeed.
Let me ask you this: what are some of the major non-Orthodox Christian figures or products that you think have played the biggest role in the Christian culture over the past 50 years? I mean, maybe some have even shaped your own faith.
Well, earlier, Father Chris, you mentioned C.S. Lewis. I think it's almost become a cliche now how much he has contributed to the Christian culture. I find it very heartening that Orthodox Christians of all stripes, you know, of all different walks of life, of all different kind of positions on things, they all quote C.S. Lewis lovingly and reverentially, because C.S. Lewis got something right. And then right at his heels, Tolkien.
Sure.
You know, yes, you have one or two Narnia movies now, but you'll never have anything from Lewis that has reached people like the Lord of the Rings trilogy has. Mm-hmm. The Hobbit, much less so. I mean, that's playing itself out now, but there's a lot less teaching going on in The Hobbit, and The Lord of the Rings is all about the nature of power and corruptibility, the nature of humility, the nature of honor. You know, The Lord of the Rings is so rich with not only kind of genuinely good human things, but with very Christian sensibilities. And the effect of that is incalculable. So Lewis and Tolkien are up there. And then, you know, in much humbler ways, there's a couple of people even recently who in their own way, as non-Orthodox, but as Christians, are touching people. There's an author, Anne Lamott. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's written several very touching, very personal, vulnerable books about her journey in the Christian faith that are very widely, popularly read. Far from only Christians read her, they just recognize in her a genuine human being who tells the truth about herself and about the world, but she's a committed Christian. You know, so there's a whole range out there.
Whole range, okay. And what about within Orthodoxy, Orthodox Christianity? Who would you think would be a key in shaping Orthodox culture here in the United States and maybe even elsewhere? Any figures that jump into your head?
Well, one person I'd like to that comes to mind for me immediately because I'm so involved in working with him right now is Arvo Pärt, the Orthodox Christian Estonian composer. He's a contemporary composer. For the past 3 years, he is the most widely performed composer alive, like living composer. And here's what's amazing. He is Orthodox Christian. His music is based on always sacred texts, whether they are scripture, their prayers, sometimes Western prayers, but more and more their prayers and episodes from St. Siloam of Mount Athos So here is a very clearly Orthodox Christian cultural figure, and guess what? He touches people worldwide. I would even say that the Orthodox haven't even come to recognize him that much. It's the rest of the world that says, my God, this music is spiritual. Mm-hmm. Something about this music speaks to my heart. I have actually spoken to atheists who are, they say, spiritually moved by Arvo Pärt's music. Yes. And you have to feel that somehow the Orthodox Church and its prayer life and its liturgy and its fathers, and he's totally steeped in that world, that is somehow, through his music, penetrating the culture. And you say, like, thank God. Wow.
Especially on that level.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some real giants out there that we can give thanks to God for.
Peter, it's always fascinating to have you on the program. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your schedule. Wishing you the very best.
Father Chris, thank you. God bless you and your ministry.
What a great launch into this month-long series on Christians and the culture around us. I know you will appreciate the content that we have selected for you and the guests who will be a part of this ongoing series. And remember that you can listen again to any of our broadcasts when you go to the web and our website at myocn.net. We're a nonprofit outreach. There is a donate button on the homepage, and that will open up a number of ways that you can become a financial partner with us and help us continue to reach out around the world with this ministry. That's myocn.net. I'm Mike Trout. Our host each week is Father Christopher Metropoulos. Special thanks, as always, to our executive producer, Ann Dankert. Remember, you're the best promotional tool we have. Let your friends know about this ministry. And always have faith in what you listen to.